Okay, welcome to the second Le Croupiers podcast. It's been a little while in coming, but I'm very pleased to say that the very elusive Mick McGeough is with me this evening, and we're going to have a little chat about Mick's running career, about the club, and conduct a little interview. I hope that this will be the first of several, not necessarily with Mick, but anyway, I'm going to fire straight into some questions, and we'll kick off with a nice easy loosener for Mick. One word answer, Mick: London or Berlin?
London.
Interesting. Okay, excellent. On to the real questions then. Been with the club since the beginning. What was it like in those early years?
Very similar in culture, seeing as we've been going 30 years. It was very small to start. Our initial base was at the National Sports Centre, which was very central, but not very friendly, and the beer was crap. Because most of us had joined from other track-based clubs, we initially simply wanted to make an impact on the road, so it's a single focus, really, and to prove to ourselves and to others that we could. I think the word got around about us very quickly, because the membership rocketed in a matter of months, and we inadvertently became a natural magnet for those training for the first London Marathon, which was in March 1981, so that's only less than a year later. However, the sport itself was much different then. Far younger, there were far fewer lady runners, and the standard was much, much higher, because the people that ran in those days tended to be competitive. There were very few recreational runners at that time. Another big factor in his taking off that I would like to pay tribute to was the presence of one of our founder members, Jeff Wood. Jeff was a brilliant communicator whose infectious enthusiasm rubbed off on everybody, and I think we have a huge debt to Jeff for all his input.
Sorely miss, I agree.
That's it.
How would you feel in your view? How has the club changed? How does it differ now from the club that started 30 years ago with 12 men in the old arcade?
Okay. The culture hasn't changed very much at all. The principles of the club, the friendliness, camaraderie, and the inclusiveness has remained, I think, throughout. And indeed, when people tend to come back who've not seen us for many years, they come through the door and they say, you know, this is like being in a time warp.
More of the same.
Yes, but in a time warp. And if you talk to any of the older members, they will tell you the sport has changed, even though the club hasn't particularly. We're much more diverse than we used to be. I think we're very respective of each other's interests, which is a huge mm-hmm. plus, because things are very, very different. There are many people doing very different things. And this is very much borne out by the range of club championships that we currently have and what we have to offer. The features which shine through the 30 years, I think, are the excellent communication within the club mm-hmm. and the many people in the club that offer their time freely and so on, the willing workers that we've got who make the club shine in many, many ways. And I think probably the best current example I can give of that is the exception of Park Run, which over the past 2.5 years I think is absolutely terrific. The input that people have, very, very ably put together by Phil, and is probably the best example of our communication skills and our inclusiveness.
Yeah,
wonderful. Wonderful.
Very high profile event.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yep.
Considering where we were, where we are, and with your crystal ball, how do you imagine the shape and the composition of the club in 30 years' time?
Well, I hope that we'll still all be going. I hope actually as well to be still alive to see it, seeing as I'll be 85 then. I think it's very difficult because we're very dependent upon society's values. I think the club has changed as a result of society's values very much, and the club very much reflects society's values. There are certainly much more health-related issues today than perhaps there were 30 years ago. So there's an increasing dependence on society. I think particularly education becomes very, very important. One thing I particularly fear is the prevalence of obesity, particularly in young people. I think that's one of the biggest dangers that a society would have to face, and hopefully we can play our part in combating that. So we have an influence, I think.
I think, you know, we've done reasonably well for 30 years.
I'm undoubtedly.
Hopeful there's another 30 years.
I'm sure there is.
Some questions now about your running. Mm-hmm. You're renowned for your twice-a-day run schedule. How do you think this has helped you personally?
Right. Endurance running is a very simple sport based on two variables, speed and endurance. We do need both, which is something I'm really pleased to see the club is currently addressing and needs to keep addressing. In terms of my particular twice-a-day schedule, I think consistency is the most important thing of all. Consistency is a huge factor. I feel that running twice a day aids my recovery because the first run early on in the day is just so slow. It just helps me recover if I've raced or run hard.
Just loosens
me up. Sets me up for the day very much in terms of, you know, if I go to work and I haven't run, for example, I find that quite difficult. So it sets me up for the day very well. It gives me a continual insight into how I'm going. So the measurement aspect of my fitness is really important to me and keeps me going. In order to maintain this consistency, two factors I really would like to emphasise is a stable home environment and a stable work environment, which I'm very fortunate to have. I've got a very understanding wife, Caroline, very supportive work colleagues who, whilst they don't always understand what I'm doing, they're very supportive and very grateful for that.
So, would you advise twice a day running too? If somebody came to you and said, right, mate, I'm quite impressed with you twice a day, and I can see you do very well off it, would you advise that they follow a similar sort of pattern?
Okay. Running is very personal. It depends on many factors, so there's no real simple answer to this. A lot of people read schedules in magazines, and there are many examples of this, and they're fine, but I think there's also an inherent danger in reading schedules. Before I give anyone advice, I like to quiz them. Why are they doing it, and what is their personal history? I think that's really important in order to give anyone a personal service, because it's a very serious and challenging question, and it's very easy to mislead people. So I feel I owe it to them to sort of say, well, what really are you chasing? What are your short-term aims? What are your long-term aims? And, you know, twice-a-day running is certainly not for many people unless they're A, very experienced, and B, extremely motivated, really.
I agree. I think that the point about magazine schedules have their place and that they give an indication of what somebody could potentially do, but one size does not fit all.
Definitely.
And apply with caution.
Definitely.
Now, you've been running for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the secret of your running longevity?
Well, I scribbled down two basic factors. The first one is desire.
Yeah.
I think you have to have huge desire. There are positives and negatives about desire. In order to actually have done what I've done, I'm very obsessive, and that can prove difficult for other people around me, particularly those who are closest to me. So I think there's probably a need to be obsessive in order to get the very best out of yourself. But as I say, there are dangers. Certainly if things go wrong, for example, if you're injured and so on, and you then suddenly that obsessiveness is for any reason taken away from you, that can have serious implications. The other thing actually is luck. Genetically, my running gait is not something which is pleasing to the eye in any way at all, but the important thing is it's very economic and very effective, which are very important factors in actually staying injury free, and by staying injury free I then naturally maintain my usual enthusiasm which people associate with me. I've had lots of help along the way by many people in being able to maintain that. They've been very significant. The one actually most recently, which I just like to give a quick plug to, is a guy called Andrew James at A Street in Motion, who I found very helpful in Sanatorium Road. And one thing which I'm quite amused at actually, last year they rang me up and they said, we'd like you to make a video for us. And so if people want to see what that looks like, if they go on their website and click on Injury Clinic, there is a short DVD which I made at their invitation last year, which I feel, it's quite funny actually, I feel hugely privileged to make this, because there were two characters in this, one of them being Ryan Jones and the other being me, and I'm the principal part in it, which, you know, I'm absolutely flabbergasted by that. But on a serious note, the orthotics that they've made me over the past 2.5 years have been absolutely first class, and they've kept my feet on the ground, if I can put it in that way. So
excellent. Andrew has got a very good reputation.
He has.
Seeing him. Was there music involved in that video?
No, there wasn't. But it was very interesting to actually work with a professional film crew. All sorts of things, all sorts of different takes and so on, things that I didn't possibly imagine going into it. The film crew were absolutely lovely. I mean, I was absolutely amazed by some of the things they said. One guy actually said to me one day, he said something like, you realise that we're missing a day of the test match to come and actually do this. Which, good grief, you know.
Yeah, a day of cricket to watch you run on a treadmill.
Well, it wasn't on the treadmill, it was outside. But it was actually really good fun. And I'm very grateful, actually, just to have the chance. And I genuinely have no idea why they asked me, other than the fact that A, I'm very voluble, and B, I'm well known. So a lot of people perhaps can relate. They say, oh, that's the guy that runs around town. Oh, let's have a look and see, you know, what this place has got to offer. But I'm still incredibly grateful for the opportunity.
Well, when I go home, I shall be tuning in.
It's about six minutes. It's quite funny.
In fact, better than that, I'll put a link to it from my website.
Okay.
What advice do you have, as a marathon? Well, I mean, we're not just a marathon club, but marathon plays a massive part in what we do.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for aspirant marathon runners?
Difficult. The first, I think, important thing is, we see it on the television and we're hugely influenced and think I'd love to do that. Be realistic. To everybody, I'd say be realistic. A marathon is a fantastic and very rewarding experience for anyone, but it needs to be treated with a huge amount of respect. Things that we've already mentioned in this interview, consistency and training are key factors. But like any endurance-based activity, you'll only get out of it what you put into it. And I think it's the ultimate test in honesty, which is what I like about it, because marathon runners tend to be very honest people.
Yeah.
But certainly the ones that do well, there are no shortcuts in marathon. So it's one of the reasons why I put together this little thing called the London Pride Award, because that actually, I think in its own little way, measures people's individual honesty, how the honest they've been themselves. If they get their two halves very close together, it shows that they've done their work, they've been honest with themselves, and they've got their just rewards, and I think that's quite nice.
There's no hiding place in running into, especially in a marathon.
No.
Do you think that training should be different at different stages in your running career? And what I mean by that is that if you're, let's say you're a 25-year-old, you're fairly new to running, you've got some pace, should you leave marathons until you're older? Or does marathon training benefit your overall development?
Again, I think the personal touch is the really important thing. It should depend upon what you want to do. There are some sort of hard and fast rules, but the personal touch, I always say, is the most important thing. You've got to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Speed is something that I personally would encourage to anybody, particularly at a young age, because speed definitely deteriorates before your endurance, and it definitely enhances your performance. So to anyone who's a performance-oriented member, and some aren't. You know, I don't want to be judgmental about this. If people aren't particularly, just want to enjoy the experience, and that's absolutely fine. But if you are performance-oriented, I would certainly recommend speed having a part, perhaps on a weekly basis within the training, which is easy to do while you're young. But also emphasise, actually, that one thing we've done is you're never too young to actually start doing speed, which is particularly borne out by our Monday night sessions over on the Measured Mile. People have really, really taken to that. Even people who are relatively experienced or relatively old, they really get a lot out of that. The inclusiveness, the fact that there's 20 of us perhaps doing it all together, I think that's been a huge success. But just to emphasise, really, it's such a personal sport that I always need to emphasise that the enjoyment is the most important factor of all.
Yeah, absolutely. And and on that note, in the many highlights of your running career, apart from the clear highlight of out-sprinting me in the last 100 metres of Blaise Castle in 98, what would you say has been the highlight of your running career?
Well, you won't be surprised when I sort of tell you this in like infinite detail, because that's the sort of my obsessiveness comes through in these things. Definitely the best performance of my career was my 2:17 in London in 1983, and by a distance that is, but that isn't necessarily, I think, the highlight of my career. And in terms of the satisfaction that it actually gave me, my favourite moment came on the 28th of June 1997 in Blackpool, when I won the British Masters 5,000 metres. Which was, if you win a race, it's very, very personal, and I really didn't expect to win. So when something is very surprising, it always means a lot. It was a very memorable weekend for me in many ways. partly because I shared it with my brother Keith, who I don't get to run with much anymore, but on that particular weekend he was also contesting British Championships over 1500 metres, and Eero Kevenen, who was visiting us at that time, and Eero and I travelled up in the car and Eero did the steeplechase, so it was a great weekend to share with two, well, obviously my brother, but also Eero was a very, very good friend at that time. So why was this event so special to me? I often say that it's not just the result that matters, it's the execution, and I've put a kind of a cryptic note here saying a principle equally important in other areas of adult life. I hardly knew anyone in the field before we started.
That helps, isn't it?
It helps, yeah, to an extent. I knew one or two people, but I didn't know many people in the field, so yeah, I didn't really feel any pressure.
Yeah.
One thing that I always do in any race, which not many other people do, is I will always run my own race. I try to always run proactively as opposed to reactively, and a lot of track runners tend to run reactively because it's an explosive distance comparative to other things, and it's very easy to get sucked into things which you may not necessarily feel comfortable with. So when I actually started the race, I told myself no faster than 73 seconds early on, and that was based upon my best time from the previous year, and I was determined to do that whatever other people did. Now, as it happened, when the leader started, they started at 70. All right, so very quickly, I was off the back of the pack. But far from being discouraged by that, I was actually very encouraged by it, because to run 70s, that's nearly 14 and a half minutes. And to be doing that at age 40, either they were that good and they were going to thrash me in any case, or they were going too fast and they were likely to come back to me if I bided my time. And that's actually very much what happened. So as the race went on, I just became more and more encouraged as people started to come back to me, and I just maintained the pace that I ran. But then I was faced with a kind of another dilemma, if you like, in that there became six of us, very, very closely matched, and there clearly wasn't a lot to choose between any of us, and I'm not the fastest athlete in the world. So you then think to yourself, well, okay, I can stay with them, but how am I actually going to beat them?
Mm-hmm.
And the principle I always try to emphasise to people in any race situation, it does have to be a personal choice, but it's good to do something which other people like least. Okay, you hurt somebody from a long way out, so they think that you're faster than they am, even if you're not, and it throws people. So with just over a lap to go, which is still quite a long, about 4:50 to go, I just went for it as hard as I could, element of surprise, if you like. It's very hard to try and sprint for that sort of distance.
It's a long way.
It's a long way to go. So there is an element, actually, of although you sprint to get the initial gap, you actually have to temper that a little bit, because if you maintain flat-out speed for that length of time, you'll actually just tire yourself and they'll just get you. So after about 100 yards of sprinting, I then kind of backed off and just tried to stride fast. And the effort in other people trying to get to me, I did get caught, but they tied up before I did. So I ran 64 last lap, which for me at that time was very quick.
That's an impressive.
And it was just the fact that just jumping the field, the element of surprise, I didn't expect to win, and when I actually did, I was stunned, really. It was also something at that time I was training a lot with Phil Cook and John Cox, and we did a form of training which I know that you've done with us called differentials, which is basically running at a certain pace and then exploding last 200. And if you like, it was something that we'd spent a lot of time practicing in training that actually was what was required on the day, and that was hugely rewarding. So,
and on a personal note, apply with caution if you're thinking about trying to use this in a race. Practice first in training.
Absolutely.
But that is a very impressive last lap, 64 seconds.
Yeah, well, kind of surprised myself, really. I certainly couldn't do it anymore.
Well, I wanted to obviously sit you down and talk through a few things that were very meaningful to you. Kind of ask you a few questions about the club, and also give some advice to new runners, which I think you've done very well there. I also wanted to mug you and ambush you with some silly questions, because I think it's not all about stats.
Absolutely.
And being obsessive, which we're all guilty of. It's also about having a little bit of fun. So I've got some questions here which you're not prepared for.
Fine.
The first one I'll allow you to answer fully, and the others are just one word questions, okay. Mick. So you know that I'm a big fan of mixing disciplines, and
yes.
And so far at least I haven't managed to get you on a bike. Is there any other discipline I could tempt you into trying?
Unlikely. It's funny because my obsessiveness actually prevents me from doing things which perhaps might be interesting, and I just fear. You know, just as a simple thing, a lot of people say, for example, go away and skiing in the winter.
Yeah,
which would be great.
It's asking for trouble.
It's asking for trouble. You see a lot of people sort of come back with broken limbs and so on, and I know what would happen if I did that and had an accident. And from that point of view, I'm very defensive, and probably some people might think very boring in what I do, but it works for me, and I think that's the important thing.
That's very understandable, having had an accident or two of myself in the past. Okay, I'll just end on a few a few questions here that I just like single word answers to, pretty much. Is it true you appeared in an episode of Gavin and Stacey?
No.
Would you appear in an episode if the money was right?
Pass, I don't know. To be honest, Simon, I don't even watch it, so I don't even know what it would entail.
If you were to appear in that episode, would you invest in a new run invest?
I'd probably have to.
I should, Coco. If Barry was a food, what would it be?
If Barry was a food?
Slippers.
Well,
that's an excellent answer for the next table in the butchers.
I personally like pizza.
Pizza, I'm going with kippers.
Okay.
Finally, would you put yourself through this ordeal again?
An interview?
Yes.
Yeah, if you want. I mean, I'll always talk if people are willing to listen. But I just think that it's important to do a range of people, because I'll always talk, but I'd love to hear other people's take on things as well.
Fantastic. I'll make sure we do that over the coming months. Thanks very much, Mick. Thanks for your time.
Not at all.
At some point in the very near future, we'll pop up another podcast.
Thanks. You.